Today, Scott Peterson, our Middle East bureau chief, explores Lebanese perspectives on the tenuous truce between Lebanon and Israel. Last week, Shoshana Solomon wrote about the mixed Israeli perceptions of the ceasefire. Israeli strikes on Beirut earlier this month raised the stakes in the decades-old conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, the Shiite Muslim group that's a powerful Iranian proxy in the region. Hezbollah is still the big story, says Mideast editor Ken Kaplan, on The Focus during the U.S. brokered pause. If there's anything for Israel and the government in Beirut to talk about, he says, it's how to disarm Hezbollah. That means sizing up the group's residual power, military, political, and assessing the Lebanese government's independence in the face of it. Scott heads to Lebanon next to report further from on the ground. It's Tuesday, April 21st. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning. I'm Clay Collins. First, our curation of news briefs compiled by our writers around the world. You can find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. A Russia-friendly party won Bulgaria's elections. Rumen Radev's newly formed left-wing Progressive Bulgaria coalition won the most votes of any single party since 1997. The country's former president ran a campaign to combat political corruption, an issue that galvanized protests in December. "I hope that we will develop practical relations with Russia based on mutual respect," said Mr. Radev, who is wary of Bulgaria getting involved in the war in Ukraine, but he also said the nation would continue its European path. He touted the electoral win as a victory of hope over mistrust. The United States launched a tariff refunds website. On Monday, U.S. Customs and Border Protection opened a portal that allows businesses to apply for refunds on the $166 billion collected on tariffs plus interest. In February, the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that President Donald Trump exceeded his authority in levying tariffs without congressional approval. More than 56,000 businesses have applied for reimbursement, which in its first phase will cover most recent imports. CPB estimates that 330,000 paid duties are now eligible for refund. The process is not open to individual consumers. Also, thousands of volunteers built 10,000 beds for children in 24 hours. The April 15th-16th event, hosted by Lowe's and Sleep in Heavenly Peace, a nonprofit organization that builds and delivers bunk beds, attracted more than 6,500 volunteers in Charlotte, North Carolina. More than 140,000 children nationwide need a bed, according to Sleep in Heavenly Peace. The newly built bed frames, plus mattresses and pillows, will be distributed across 110 of the organization's chapters in 36 states. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. It's not a good time to be a small business owner in Russia. With the financial costs of the war in Ukraine growing, the Kremlin has been raising taxes on and rolling back exemptions for entrepreneurs. Fred Weir reports from Moscow for the Monitor. As civilians displaced by the Israel-Hezbollah conflict in Lebanon try to return to their war-damaged homes, a new Israeli occupation zone in the country's south poses an obstacle for many. Meanwhile, the ceasefire has reduced but not eliminated the fighting. Scott Peterson reports from London for the Monitor. Retiring legislators, and some who have been on Capitol Hill a long time, say they can hardly recognize the institution in which they serve. The changes could lead to a very different type of candidate who seeks to join the House or Senate. Caitlin Babcock reports for the Monitor. Péter Magyar is set to take Hungary's reins with the powers of a supermajority at his disposal. experts say that he'll need it to loosen the grip that Viktor Orbán established on the country and with the European Union demanding change. Mark Sappenfield reports from Berlin for the Monitor. Democrat-led cities protested ICE arrests. Now, conservative towns cited for massive immigration detention centers are also pushing back, pointing out infrastructure and budget strains and exposing a rift between federal enforcement and local concerns. Patrick Johnson reports from Social Circle, Georgia, for the Monitor. April's top nonfiction book titles include a revelatory take on Lewis and Clark's Corps of Discovery expedition and a memoir with deep roots in West Virginia's Allegheny Mountains. Fiction favorites cover the latest from Tana French and Ben Lerner, plus a canine charmer and a transformed trophy wife. Staff and contributing reviewers write for the Monitor. Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on pointers for restoring trust in higher education. For at least a decade, Americans have wrestled with growing questions and doubts about their institutions of higher education and the value of a traditional four-year degree. The declining confidence has been driven by concerns over escalating costs and growing student indebtedness, uneven job prospects, and on-campus political polarization. These concerns have fed into calls by the current administration for changes to accreditation procedures and transparency in admissions processes, especially among elite institutions. There are indications, however, that the downward trend in Americans' trust in higher education and its outcomes is not irreversible. Universities are challenging themselves to ask hard questions and take actions to repair the breach. Academic introspection must begin with a clear-eyed appraisal of our failures around democratic education, Professor Jonathan Zimmerman of the University of Pennsylvania observed in the Chronicle of Higher Education last week. On the affordability front, private universities have continued to expand free tuition for lower and middle-income students. Earlier this year, for instance, Dartmouth College raised the family income threshold to $175,000 a year, while Yale University upped its cap to $200,000. And when it comes to the public's return on investment concerns, it helps that prospects for new graduates are brighter than they were a year ago. On Monday, the National Association of Colleges and Employers reported that employers expect to increase new graduate hiring by 5.6% and internship opportunities by nearly 4% over a year ago. But beyond dollars and cents, university leadership and faculty are engaging in honest and humble inquiry that acknowledges and addresses public concerns, which might be the most effective way to rebuild confidence. And in doing so, they are modeling the very traits they seek to instill in the students as they prepare for work and civic life: genuine listening, reflection, transparency, and flexibility. Last week, when announcing the public release of a special report on restoring trust in higher education, Yale University President Maury McGuinness highlighted the need to take responsibility for our role in the erosion of public trust. For higher education to serve the public good, we need the American people to believe fully in its power and purpose, she wrote, noting that trust is dynamic and the work that earns it is continuous. In assessing the report's recommendations, which include prioritizing academic achievement, pushing back against grade inflation, and enhancing open debate on campus, The Wall Street Journal praised Yale for the lack of defensiveness and arrogance that has been the typical academic response to criticism. Dartmouth College President Sion Bylock is a proponent of a similar approach, as universities face government funding cuts and sanctions. "Reflection does not mean capitulation," she wrote to the college community last year. "We owe it to our country," she said, "to search for solutions that protect our fierce independence while improving who we are and what we offer." That spirit of self-reflection, Dr. Bylock said, gives us an opportunity to look at ourselves and ask where we can be truer to our own ideals. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, as we rejoice in a spiritual sense of existence, we see greater evidence that good things don't come to an end. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Alyssa Britton and Mackenzie Farkas.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. Copyright 2026.